Welcome back to Classical Guitar Insider. This is your host, Brett Williams, and today on the show, it's An Tran, Vietnamese guitarist who lives in Chicago. He's been here since he was 15. He's an outstanding musician, and he's promoting music from his home. And it's an incredible album if you haven't heard it. The first track on it is like 14 minutes long. It's epic. It's awesome. Please listen to it. I always like being introduced to music I haven't heard before for the guitar. And it's great. It's exciting and inspirational. So I really like the album. I've been meaning to talk to him. He came to town. I didn't go to his concert. Surprise, surprise, right? You know, I don't go to concerts anymore. Well, I do. I don't go to guitar concerts anymore. I went to a concert last week with Thomas. Tom Flippin. Little Tommy Flippin. We went to Carnegie Hall and saw Mark Dover and Imani Winds. If you haven't seen Imani Winds, if you haven't heard them, listen to them. There's nothing like a woodwind ensemble. It's unbelievable. They can do it all. They've got all the colors at their disposal. They their dynamics. You don't have to, you know, sit there and worry about them being quiet or anything. If anything, they're too loud. That's not true at all. But it was a lot of fun. And, you know, boy, do we have a thing to learn from all the other instruments out there. It was an exciting concert. It was relevant. Everything, you know, every piece had meaning. And it was very contextual within its own universe. It was great. It was a very enjoyable experience. I'm not saying guitar concerts can't be that way. I don't know. I'm kind of all over the place right now. I love guitar. I've just talked about how much I like An's album. Anyway, I'm all over the place. I'm trying to get this done today. Liz is at work. I don't know if you know this, but she's always here, right? Which is, you know, God bless her. It's a little inhibiting when you know that your wife is in the other room and she can hear what you're saying. You know, and right now she's in third trimester pregnancy, so she between you and me, she pees all the time. It's a constant, constant peeing. It's a pee festival over here in the Williams residence. And, you know, when I'm sitting there doing an intro and I hear a trickle in the other room, I am inhibited. Anyway, the monsters at her office, this is why we do what we do, folks. This is why we work in education or we work in the arts or whatever it is. Sometimes you ask yourself, why do we do what we do? Why do we put up with this no money thing? You know, none of us are making cash. I get it. But man, in order to make the cash, oh, these jerks. I hope no CEOs that, you know, the corporation she works for are listening to their, you know, classical guitar podcast. Oh, that's cute. The neighbors just made this little nook, little breakfast nook out in their backyard here. I've got a great view of the backyard. Anyway, I'm all over the place. I'm not used to this. I'm not used to being alone. They're making her come in, all right? Like I said, very pregnant at this point. We've got like 2 months left till baby Wally comes out. And they did like a, what's that guy? Who's the Tesla guy? Elon Musk. And they said, everybody's got to come into work, no matter what. Well, you know, Liz remotely counsels their marketing team in Richmond, Virginia. She doesn't even work with anybody in New York. She is sort of like the New York designer that they are, you know, hiring to head up their team. And instead of doing it remotely from her, you know, from her office while she's pregnant, she has to drive into Midtown Manhattan, not drive in, take a sardine-packed subway where people aren't giving up their seats. Subway's worse than it's ever been as far as, like, crazy people being allowed on there. It's, like, nuts. And And she's got, and she gets off on 54th and Lex and takes like a claustrophobic staircase that's like, you know, 4 minutes, single file line. Terrifying. So that she can go and book different rooms and work out of those to remotely work with her group in Virginia because some succession style piece of shit CEO decided that everybody has to go to work. Because for him, it's just, you know, he hops into a town car and he drives to an office and he's, you know, supported by a team of four personal servants while he's, you know, ushered up to his office overlooking Central Park. Well, that's not what my little Liz is going through. Anyway, so it's mixed because I don't have to listen to her pee, but I do feel bad for her. And here we are. And now I'm back to this. And I got to say, I do feel like the creative juice is flowing a little bit. You know, it's different having your own space, isn't it? It's pretty good. But I'm giving up those things. I'm giving them up for Wally. And, well, I'm not giving them up. I had to find a way to do this even though someone was peeing in the other room, right? And I did it. It's just, man, do I wish I was, you know, right across the street, there's a whole photo shoot going on. They are taking pictures of a model against a wall, and there is a team of about 50 people that have been employed for what I'm assuming is over $20 an hour to, like, take pictures of a model against a white wall. The disparity in this country is staggering. It's, I don't know if that's the right word, but it's pretty mind-blowing. Anyway, let's talk about the sponsors for 2 seconds. Do not turn it off. I want you to go to Classical Guitar Corner. It's been a long time. Our boy Simon is back. All right? Go over there, take a look, be supportive. Get over to Classical Guitar Corner with Simon Powis, old friend. You know, if I'm going to have anybody on again, it's probably going to be Simon, and this is why. Because he was on here before he did any of this stuff. And I know that he interviewed me for the 100th episode of Classical Guitar Insider, but it would be really nice to have him back on now that he's accomplished so much. So that's something I'd like. I think I'd like to have old Simon back on. Just because we do the same thing too. And it would be nice to talk to him where it wasn't him interviewing me. It was actually just us, you know, talking shop for you guys and talking about doing this. Because now, you know, I see it. Now everybody's got a podcast, right? But that wasn't the case back then. Anyway, so, yeah, the sponsors, of course, are, you know, Classical Guitar Corner. Get back over there with Simon Powis, the best educator on the market. Beautiful videos. Great ideas, wonderful, and most importantly, wonderful community. Go to classicalguitarcorner.com and tell Simon that Big Diaper Brett sent you. You know where else you go? You go to savageclassical.com. That's SAVAGE classical.com. And you tell Richard that I sent you. I got to go see Richard. I was hanging out with Gabe Handy, if you don't know who he is. He's a great guitarist. He's not, like, you know, hustling out there or anything like that. He's a neighbor. He's the only other classical guitarist in Greenpoint. And I was hanging out with him and playing his Gary Lee and his John Price. And I'm in the market. All right. So if you got any suggestions, I know An was saying after his interview, we were talking, he's saying he plays a Connor, like Zyra and Elliot Fisk do and everything like that. Yeah, I need to do it, especially if I'm going to play for you guys and not just at these shitty libraries that are booking me. No offense. They're not shitty. They're great. Some of them are great. Some of them are really well done, like full-blown stages. Other ones are like, you know, I show up and there's like six people in the audience and I've been working all week. Okay, so that's it. That's everything. That's shop. We're taking care of business. Let's get on with it. Here's my interview with An Tran. You're a pretty young guy, right? You're like in your early 30s?
I'm 31. Yeah.
31, and so, you know, it's a different, I mean, I'm 46, It's different now, but where do you come from? And what was sort of your experience with that culture growing up?
Yeah, so I'm from the capital city, Hanoi, Vietnam.
Yeah.
And I was there until the age of 15. You know, grew up in Vietnam, grew up in Hanoi, you know, starting guitar, starting at age eight. And just fell in love with the instruments. And you know, I went to a music school, the National Conservatory of Music. That's like the biggest school in Vietnam, music school in Vietnam. And yeah, and then started moving to the US when I was 15 years old to finish high school. I went to a boarding school in Nebraska. And just start college and all that, and started my career. Yeah.
So you're essentially a first generation Vietnamese immigrant.
I moved here. I moved here on the visa. You know, I didn't move here to my parents didn't move here with me. I was by myself, on a student visa, like as an international student.
It was a private school in Nebraska.
Yeah, to a private boarding school in Nebraska where they had a lot of international students from like Taiwan, China, and Korea, a lot of Koreans.
So it was mostly international kids?
Well, they have a big international program, but also they were American, like American kids there.
All boys, or what are we talking about?
Boys and girls. It was a Christian school. Yeah, it's like a Christian boarding school. It's called Nebraska Christian School.
Why did your parents send you to Nebraska Christian School?
Yeah, well, the tuition was very high for boarding school in the U.S. So I think that was like one school that was like the most affordable on the list, you know. And at that time, you know, I needed to get out of the country. I needed to study like, you know, different cultures, expand my kind of knowledge and my technical studies. And and my parents thought that, you know, I should just go abroad. And I was studying English, the US was like the main choice there. So we were trying to find a school in the US, and that was, you know, one of the schools that accepted me and also more affordable.
It's small and affordable. And I would assume, coming from Vietnam, that, you know, things like this don't, that education is free, right? I mean, it's not something.
Yeah, very little money. Affordable, I mean, compared to other schools, but it's still very expensive, you know, compared to like a Vietnamese salary.
Yeah. So your parents had to sacrifice to get you there.
Yes. It's a whole, I mean, where I am now, it's like the whole sacrifice of the whole family. It's like.
And do they remind you of that every single time you talk to them?
No. I'm very thankful for everything, you know, and for the fact that they never remind me of that. I am aware of that, you know.
What did they do? What did your dad do? Was he a musician, mom a musician, anything like that?
So my dad was a photojournalist.
Mm-hmm.
He retired now. So I think I think the artistic side of me kind of came from both of them. My mom was a professor of French language at the medical university. So, nothing music related at all. But you know, my dad was a photojournalist, so he that was an artistic side for him. And my mom now, she does painting. She paints a lot now. Now that's retired, she started her passion again of painting. So I think it's music was always in our blood. I think but.
Well, those are two sort of occupations that, you know, at least bring, they seem very, very kind of Vietnamese, you know, you said a French teacher, essentially.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we know about that. That language is such, you know, such a big part of Vietnam at this point, I would assume.
Yeah.
And then you also have your dad doing a photojournalist, which some of the biggest photos, some of the most, you know, impactful photos of the 20th century came out of Vietnam. So, I mean, what did your dad, did he work for a magazine or was he a freelancer or?
Yeah, so he works for a few places. So he works for the Red Cross of Vietnam. And he was editor in chief for the
Wow.
magazine for the it's called I think it's a humanity magazine or something like that. But he was in charge of that, and he was also a photo journalist for the Economics Times, the Vietnamese economics magazine.
Well, it sounds like your parents also, well, then that sounds like they were sort of cosmopolitan. They were international in scope and in mind. And so I can understand how people like, from those backgrounds would, want you to kind of experience a broader, a broader sort of musical, artistic, personal, educational experience. I don't know why they sent you to Nebraska, but and now you're in the Midwest and you live there and you're a professor there and you're a Midwest guy now. But
It's very interesting.
it's an
Well,
interesting choice. I
we
mean, and
didn't
also, like you're saying,
know.
it's a cheap, it's a, it was an affordable place to go to college. Whereas if you go to New York, you're going to get wiped out. Your entire savings, like, is gone.
Exactly. Yeah, and actually, it was in college. It was just high school. It was just like 11th and 12th grades,
Oh my
and
God.
it was already expensive. Can you imagine? Like, So the idea was to send me here when I was 15, learning my language, learning English, and really kind of just like work on the guitar on my own and kind of like find scholarship by myself. That's basically was the idea. Like, that's basically just let's drop this guy here and let him swim.
Yeah. I mean, and that does kind of, I mean, with language that does work. That's really the only way it works. I
It
mean,
helps a lot.
you seem very accumulated. I mean, at this point, you've been here for almost 20 years. So you've been here for as long as you were there. Wow.
I mean, more now. It's crazy.
It is crazy. Yeah, 'cause I think about myself as being from Stockton, California, but really, I only was there for 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, something like that. I've been in New York for 22 years, going on 23 years. It's like, but I still feel like I'm like, no, I'm from there. I'm from that place. Wherever I graduated high school. How much do you feel like you're from Nebraska? Do you have any of those feelings? Do you feel like you're Nebraskan in any way?
No.
What about Chicagoan?
I
Yeah,
guess,
man.
I'm from Chicago and I'm from Hanoi. Like, I'm part of the two. I've been in Chicago for so long. I'm American citizen now, so I like sometimes my identity is kind of mixed. I like don't know. Some people ask me like, do you want me to refer you as American Vietnamese? And I'm like, I don't. I mean, it's just Vietnamese. I've been Vietnamese my whole time. It's very strange. Like, I don't know. I
You
don't really
feel
know.
Vietnamese, yeah. You feel mostly Vietnamese then.
I do. Yeah, that's my root, and that's my, even though I live here more longer now, but it's still, that's like, where I'm from.
What's your relationship to Hanoi in particular? Do you, I mean, is that city, is that, I mean, it's the capital of Vietnam, but it's also, how does that sort of, I don't know exactly, there's that, and then there's,
Yeah,
is this,
that's the Saigon, Ho Chi Minh City.
yeah, Ho Chi Minh City, right? Yeah, that's what Saigon
That's
became.
the two.
I should know all this stuff, just but I don't know anything. I know what I know. I learn these things and then they go. I'm like, oh yeah, Ho Chi Minh City is now, that's what they call Saigon. So Saigon is no longer, okay. And then that 2 weeks later, I forget
Well,
what's
they
going
still
on.
call Saigon. The people there still call Saigon. In fact, there's a the big guitar festival
Wow.
there. It's called Saigon Guitar Festival. But yeah, Hanoi is home for me. My family's still there. My cousins, my uncles, everybody is still there. So I would that would be home. Every time I go home, if I get on the plane going home, very excited, just like a kid again. So it's nice to have that place. If
Yeah, to be from a big city is, it's got to be pretty awesome because when you go home, there is sort of so much to do
absolutely.
and so much to explore and
Absolutely. And I'm excited. I'm just thankful for that because My life could probably be different if I, you know, if from Chicago or something else, or somewhere.
Nebraska, if you were
or
from
Nebraska,
them.
Yeah. You know, I couldn't be as excited as going home as I am now. You know,
I'm having a kid. I'm having a kid in July, and it's my first kid. I want to raise it here in the city. Yeah. My wife is a little more like, I want him to have a backyard, but I'm like, I had a backyard. I didn't really care. Yeah. I'd rather be in the city. I'd rather raise the kid in the city. So he's happy to, you know, come home. He feels like he got that pride, you know, yeah. He's into the yeah. baseball teams or whatever.
Yeah.
But
well, I mean, yeah, we have a kid, and she's almost 1 year old. Actually, it's crazy.
Oh, wow.
In 2 weeks, she will be 1 year old. But
that's something to congratulate you on, because the kids made it out. Yeah.
and we don't have backyard, you know, but we have this recording studio that she goes out.
Yeah, and people aren't seeing the recording studio, but it is good looking.
Yeah,
it's nice. I mean, this is the thing. Are you in Chicago and you're doing that? So that's your recording studio. Is it an apartment? Is it like a house?
So yeah, we bought this. It's a condo. It used to be, the whole building used to be a bank, like a big bank. And it renovated to be to six different condos, so we have the bike one, and we have the biggest one. Is there's four floors.
Whoa!
The basement we have, and then we have like a Murphy bed here. So when artists come, when my friends or artists, guest artists come, they stay here, and there's a private bathroom, and they can record if they want to.
Oh wow, that's really cool! What part of Chicago are you in?
Southwest side. Southwest, yeah.
I think it's Southwest. I think that's where I stayed there when I visited in a friend's place. And yeah, it's like a lot of like you said. I mean, I don't know about banks becoming condos, but it is a lot of condos. Mostly yes. People live in condos.
Yes, and well, in this area around here, there's a lot of houses. So that
a lot of houses. Very nice area. Very fun. Like, very cool.
Backyard. Yeah. So, but we don't have that. We have a rooftop. So
that's cooler. And it's a rooftop of a bank.
Rooftop of a bank overlooking the city skyline. So, we don't feel the need of a backyard for our kid. You know, it's just because we have the space. That's
well, I mean, as far as like, you know, I mean, Chicago is like, we could talk a lot about Chicago. I just had someone else on. We talked a lot about Seattle, but you have a lot to talk about. You are doing really exciting things on your instrument. Let's talk about your last album from 2020.
Sure.
Because it is sort of, I am always really excited when people are playing, you know, I'm assuming that these are arrangements of traditional.
Yeah. So they are arrangements. Music. They are, there's only two arrangements of traditional Vietnamese music, and the rest, original compositions from Vietnamese composers.
How do you say it? Nguyen or Nguyen?
Nguyen. It's Nguyen.
Nguyen.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's very good.
Well, I grew up, like I said, I grew up in a town with a lot of it, but we always said Nguyen.
Nguyen.
But it's Nguyen.
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 Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got, yeah.
That's close enough. Yeah.
I've been, oh, it's close enough.
Close enough. That's good.
The first piece on here is so captivating. It's huge. It's epic. It tells a story. It's just like Lord of the Rings level stuff for solo guitar. Your playing is outstanding. Obviously, you've got all your chops, and we'll talk about that background. Let's talk about this album a little bit, though. Legend of the Bamboo Child.
Mm-hmm.
So this was an original composition by An Nguyen?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So this piece is original compositions, and it's based on a story, and the story is like the mythical folklore, and everyone in Vietnam would know like this story. The story and in Vietnamese is called Thanh Dong, which is called translated as the Bamboo Child. Mm. And the story is that, you know, there was a, like, God or, like, you know, different universe sent down, like a a soldier to fight off the enemies from that was invading Vietnam. And you know, he could grow up as a baby and grow up very fast and start fighting off the enemies, and at the end he flies to the heavens and look down. That's kind of like the very short story of the whole thing. There's different versions of it as well. So but the core idea is that, you know, and then the music describes that, the whole story. So in the beginning, there's a theme of Thanh Dong, of the bamboo child as a baby, beautiful village. And then there's war, you know, war's coming. So like enemies are coming and the country is like freaking out, you know. So you can hear that he started to include, you know, notes that seems, you know, sound kind of wrong, you know, but that's the idea. And then
so you have atonality to sort of represent the chaos of war. Yeah,
exactly.
Just a little bit. I've heard it. Yeah. So it's just a little bit in the tremolos and stuff like
just
that.
Just a little bit. Yeah. And then there's war, there's fighting, you know, there's battles, and there's victory. And there's at the end, there's memories, those memories of him looking back to his whole life, and then fly off to the heaven, right? To the mountain and then to the heaven. So that's why at the end you hear the sound moving upward.
Because he goes back home to heaven, because he's a god. He's a demigod. Yes. He's a half god. So he's God sent to fight and defend Vietnam against invaders.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Does that mean anything to you? I mean, this story must resonate considering everything that Vietnam's been through.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a story.
Not just with the U.S., but before the U.S. It's a it's a country that is constantly being attacked.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, just constantly war. So that's the story that, that's why the story didn't say, you know, a particular enemy, but it's just enemy in general. You know, that's the idea.
It must be a looming threat in sort of the background of sort of growing up there, sort of in your parents, you know, considering everything that they've done. There's always this sort of, not threat, but this feeling of, wow, that was not that long ago.
Yeah. You know, exactly.
That was within their lifetime for sure.
Yeah.
Almost within mine. So it's pretty wild to think about, you know, what all these in the folklore. I mean, this is obviously an ancient idea, right? The bamboo child.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, it's just throughout history, like if you study history class in Vietnam, I mean, there will be just war after war after war. All kind of different wars happen. Yeah, so that's kind of like the part of the history, you know, like, or like if I go to, before this album came out, you know, I would go play few pieces from Vietnam, you know, and people just mentioned Vietnam War, like, you know, oh, my dad was in the war, or my grandparents were in the war. Mm-hmm. And it's just constant. That was the topic, you know, every time I talk to somebody about Vietnam, it's like the Vietnam War. Yeah. So that's why I really wanted to do this album, because then I can present some other feel, some, you know, like a classical guitar album from Vietnam. You know, that was the hope. That's just to bring this music out. And
Well, the integrity of the recordings too, you know, this could have been something that was just all based on, you know, Vietnamese melodies, and it just sort of kind of ran through that. But there's actual compositional depth that goes beyond that, that goes beyond just simply, I recently went to a concert here and someone was presenting, you know, a composition that was based on various Indian rags. And it just sort of came across as just that, just like, here's one here. Oh, here's another. But this composition, every composition on here, especially the first one and the last one, which really, both those really grabbed me, the title track, Stay My Beloved.
Yes.
And then the Legend of the Bamboo Child is just like, you know, it's right. It's the length and depth of any symphony. Right. But it's written for solo instrument. What is your relationship with An Nguyen?
So he's a friend. Now I call him a dear friend.
Yeah.
He, He was very, I mean, he's a big composer, guitarist in Vietnam. He was born in 1970, so he's much older than me. So when I was a kid, he came out with the album, with his debut album, and the title track, the Bamboo Child and also the Stay My Beloved were on that album. And I grew up listening to that. I was like, wow, this piece is incredible. But since then, nobody played it. Nobody recorded
it. I was unaware of these.
Yeah. You know? So I had a dream, you know, I had a dream of when I was a kid, like just like, you know, imagine one day I'm good enough to play this, these pieces. That would be like really, that would be like my life kind of, my life goal. And that's why when I wanted to record this album, like I have to learn these pieces, you know, I have to learn this this legend Bamboo Child, even though it was so difficult.
It sounds very difficult. It sounds, I mean, I have a sort of a dystonia in my right hand, so there's no way I could do these things with my finger doing this. But there's stuff on there that's, yeah, I mean, it's like the Chaconne level.
Yeah, so it's difficult. Yeah, you know, he started with Step and Rock in the Czech Republic. So, you know, he developed this five, four fingers tremolo using the pinky.
So that's what I'm hearing is a pinky tremolo?
Yes, with the pinky.
Jeebus. Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, so you know, I had to develop that technique and it was very difficult. And I had to grow my pinky nails longer and yeah, anyway. But
and you don't do the thing where like that's the one nail that you can go, you know? It's like the one. It's the one and you're just like, yeah, I am ripped. I treat my pinky nail like it's just like a bad boy. I'm just like, so yeah, it is hard to grow out a pinky nail, I'm sure. Good. And, you had to grow that out and you had to do that. And that was so that's everywhere. That five finger.
Yeah, that tremolo. Was mainly like it was at the end when there was like all six string tremolos. That was the end. And playing this live, like it can be tiring. But it's exciting. You know, it's a whole story. The whole piece it has a story, it has a direction, and it's exciting to perform it.
You said playing it live. Yeah, I mean that is a thing with these long pieces. Is they really do get you, man? I mean, they are really. You know, you go into it thinking like, oh, this will be fun. I'll play this, but it is very challenging. How do you deal with that challenge on stage? Of having to play a long form, nonstop piece like this, is challenging. I mean, when you're running out of juice, what do you do?
Yeah, I guess it helps I actually, by the way, I always program this like either first piece or the second piece. So I have all the energy.
Get it out of the way. It's the first piece on the album too.
Get it out of the way. Mm-hmm. But you know, it helps with the story because I know the story. And I know where it is in the story, and it's basically me telling the story. So it it's musically rewarding, but it's also technically it's you know, I guess you just do it enough times.
No, I think your the idea of starting this early wouldn't necessarily occur to you just on a programming basis unless you actually played it and you were like, oh, I think next time I'm going to play that first, but it does sort of lend itself to that because the introduction is something you can, you know, you can kind of warm up with it,
exactly,
connect with the audience, be expressive without being just challenged. Yeah. And then, you know, by the time Threat of War comes around, you're all warmed up,
yes.
You know, you're 7 minutes in or whatever.
That's smart.
Yeah, playing them in the beginning of the thing. And then the other pieces are more pieces by, but I don't mean to talk, they're also great. The piece by Dong and also, arranged by Dong. So what's your relationship with Long Nhoc Dong?
Yeah, so he's, you know, he's also, I mean, I know him very well. We talk a lot about his pieces when I was recording this. But like, I, you know, he's older, so I have great respect for him.
And he's a guitarist?
He's also a guitarist, yeah. But you know, I would say like we don't have that kind of close brother relationship like me and Tian.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, like Long is like a figure in Vietnam, like classical guitar in Vietnam that uses respect and you know, play his music and but I would say I'm probably closer to An than Long. But you know, it's very rewarding and very helpful when I was recording this album and asking them about the ideas behind these pieces and getting the backstory is such a insight. You know, it's such a great resource in order to play this.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah, because growing up, what did you play growing up? You said you had to kind of work up to this, but was it just traditional classical guitar music, Villa-Lobos, Bach?
Yeah, you know? Yeah, anything, everything but Vietnamese music.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I grew up like playing very little Vietnamese music, right? Yeah. Because we all wanted to play, you know, Bach and Villa-Lobos and Rodrigo and all that. When I came to US, same thing. You know, I came to US playing through my studies, undergraduate, you know, masters. Maybe I was learning one piece or two pieces, you know, and not until my doctorate that I really like. I was kind of lost. I was just like, I'm lost, like identity. I'm musically identity lost. I don't know who I am. You know, I'm not sure if I'm Vietnamese or I'm American. I'm not sure it's what my thing is. So I became like just kind of finding myself, you know. And then through the concerts that I play, I would just program one or two Vietnamese pieces. But these two pieces were the one that people talk about the most. They didn't want to talk about my Rodrigo, how fast I could play some scales. just talk about the Vietnamese pieces. So I was like, wow. So people actually resonate with this. And I'm also feel great playing those. So I'm going to program more. And then that's when this album idea came about. It's just like, well, I got to just connect with my root, you know, who I am, my identity. So,
yeah, I mean, that's the only way forward. For not just for you, for all of us is in these new compositions. These are also this is we said atonal. It's not atonal. There's nothing in here that's atonal. It's all it's all based on certain modes and stuff.
Exactly.
The compositional style and stuff like that. Do you know anything, or have you done any sort of research into the sort of the different modes that they use?
Just basically different, it's a pentatonic scales. That's
pentatonic, just across the board, right? Everywhere.
The board. Yes, because they are in the musical instruments of Vietnam. So actually, I just wrote a document for my doctorate, you know, lecture recital, you know, these scales are embedded in the musical instruments. Like there's like they have the zither that 16 strings, but they tuned in pentatonic scale. So people were playing that. And that was, you know, the part of the whole system, musical language right there. So composers for this album, like this music, they use those instruments as inspiration to arrange for the guitar. Like they try to like how do you make it more traditional? So I got to incorporate the sound of Dan Chang, the sound of this instrument, the sound of that instrument, try to include it in the compositions. So that's why I make it more, similar to the Vietnamese audience, but also familiar to a Vietnamese audience and also familiar to the classical guitar world.
I think that's the thing that is striking me about this music in particular, is that it does work so well on the guitar. And that probably has a lot to do with the guitar's pentatonic sort of tuning.
Yeah.
And then sort of just the what's going on culturally with the music. Did you feel that way? Did you feel when you played this that it fit on the guitar very naturally?
Yeah.
More naturally than some of the Spanish stuff even.
Absolutely. It's very, 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 easy to understand, easy to play. You know, it's very, it makes sense. Everything makes sense.
You can keep things in one position in the left hand a lot, I would assume, and stuff like that. Or you just kind of move. I mean, because sometimes with things like Rodrigo, you're just moving all over the place. Your hands, right, just kind of, right, it's kind of ridiculous. It's kind of like you're. Right.
Right. So yeah, I mean, you stay in one position, and also there's a lot of answer, you know, question and answer voice, you know, two different voices. So.
Oh wow, there is.
Yeah, well, I mean, the first movement is the first piece that definitely has crazy stuff in here, like, you know, things moving all over the place.
And there's counterpoint. There's counterpoint.
There's counterpoint. There's, exactly. There's
counterpoint within, you know, the sort of this music. The way that An is composing in particular is very contrapuntal.
Yeah.
But it's using modes that we have that we.
Exactly.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, we hear them, but we hear them in different con. We don't hear them in this context.
Yeah.
So. Exactly. I understand you have another album coming out too, right?
Yes. Yes.
And that's coming out soon. It's coming out this year.
It's coming out in. Less than 2 months, on June 23rd. Yeah.
Wow.
And the album is completely different music. It's Napoleon Coast.
You know, after all the shit we talked.
Yeah. Now we go back to Coast.
You're like, I'm making a Bach album. Napoleon Coast, that's good. Okay, so what, and that's just across the board? Just him?
That's him. It's so Naxos has this series, you know, guitar works. They want to record all the composers, right? So they recorded 5 volumes, and they stopped at number five. So it took them 20 plus years for this Vietnamese guy to wait 20 years plus years to restart the project. Continue.
Oh, okay. You know, oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
It stopped for a while. What an honor for me. I mean, it's like to continue that series, you know, all the amazing guitarists performed before me recorded, my heroes, you know, so
yeah.
20 years ago, I was, you know, in Vietnam as a kid listening to their Naxos album. And not in my lifetime I would ever imagine I would record the next volume. You know, that's just seem very crazy to me. Like an alternative unit. You know, like what? Like what, you know, so that's it's coming out and on June 23rd and I'm quite excited about it. It's there's some really great compositions in there.
That is exciting. It's very exciting. I'm excited about it. I think I like the album with the Bamboo Child more, but I'll bet you I'll like that one too. I'll like the Napoleon Coast enough. It'll be fun. Are you going to get back into It will. No, Norbert Kraft is good. It's going to be fun. It's going to be another one. I'm excited for it. Everybody get excited. June 23rd. Go listen to it. But as far as like, are you going to, have you talked to any younger Vietnamese composers that you're going to be working with in the future?
Yeah. So that's my point. I mean,
that's your mission.
So that's my mission. Just to bring all and commission new works from Vietnamese composers. You know, it's my mission. It's kind of like my dream to be able to do that, you know?
Yeah.
But it's also very exciting to record other things, you know, it's, for me, as a kind of musicians, I hear from my teachers and even my wife say that, you know, you kind of prove that you can play all this music as well, you know.
It is, yeah, it's true, because it is a different. I'm a composer. Everything I release, record wise, is my compositions. On concerts, I play other people's music too, and it's always very challenging, and it's always very rewarding and very refreshing. And I'm sort of in that moment now where I've spent several years just playing my compositions, probably 15 years. And now I'm starting to do solo concerts again, and I'm starting to play other people's music again. And it's a very good palate cleanser. I think that if you were just sitting there, and I can imagine what it would be like if you were just playing pentatonic scales for 3 albums in a row, you'd probably go a little crazy. So I can understand why you want to, you know, play some dotted rhythms and some... some major tonalities.
Yeah, so that's my, you know, that's kind of my way I'm currently going. I don't know how the future is going to be, but I want to, you know, alternate. So like one album Vietnamese, one album of other music, right?
Yeah.
So this time's cost, and next one probably going to be Vietnamese Volume 2. And after that, going to be music that really informed me. So new works. I have a few compositions that written for me, and some more coming, and hopefully become a one album, and I will record that as well.
Well, it's like your wife is saying too, you don't want to just be the guy that plays the Vietnamese music.
Yeah.
And you want to be the guitarist that you are, which you're outstanding, an outstanding guitarist. And your contributions to the field are beyond what just, you know, just presenting Vietnamese music, even though that is probably, to me, that's just the most fun thing going on.
Yeah,
but I mean, you know, we all don't want to just become one thing, especially when you're an artist. As an artist, you
that's
kind of death, you know. So I can understand you're wanting to move away from that, and the excitement of like what that could be, because right now it's Napoleon Cost. Another time it could be somebody else. It could be a whole, you know, I don't know, ensembles. I mean, you're only 31.
Exactly.
You got your whole life ahead of you, and you're already teaching. How is teaching going for you? Where are you teaching right now? And so,
I've been teaching for more than 2 years now at Northern Illinois University,
mm-hmm.
and now we have a concert series. We bring artists in, and it's very exciting. And that's in DeKalb. It's like an hour and 15 minutes from Chicago. But this spring, this last winter, I mean in January, I accept a new job, and it's the University of Illinois, Chicago. So it's right downtown Chicago. Well, near downtown Chicago.
Oh, that's cool. That's exciting. That's fun.
That's fun. Yeah, because then I can connect with all the Chicago guitar students. And, you know, DeKalb, NIU, Northern Illinois is more for like the surrounding students, you know, like it's a state school for everybody else. But UIC, University of Illinois, Chicago is more for like Chicago students, you know, public school students, and accessible for everybody by train, and it's easy. So I'm excited about that. I'm really excited about that. I just started that program, so I'm new. We have to develop it, of course, too.
I know that you are going to get some teaching chops because you worked with Julie Goldberg. And I know that she, as a pedagogue, is very cool, very sought after. I've seen some of her master classes online and stuff, and she's really good with that. She's really good at expressing technique in a way that's approachable and that's kind of, I don't know, a little more fun, a little more like understandable. Yeah. She's good at like organizing thoughts. Did you find that with her? And did you kind of get some teaching chops with her?
Absolutely. Yeah. My teaching basically came from like everything. I mean, all my teachers, like I'm
right. Not just,
I would say, I think I learned how to teach from every single teacher that I had. Like I had amazing teachers, so far throughout my career, you know. Julie was, so patient. Like she was able to explain things very clearly, very well. Mm-hmm. You know, and she was explaining in a way that is clear out, like a roadmap for you, you know.
That's what I was sort of thinking. Yeah, it's sort of organizing her thoughts. There's a lot of good guitarists out there. Doesn't make them a good teacher.
That's true.
You know, so, and she's a good teacher for sure. Yeah. I think. It seems like.
Absolutely. Yeah. I had 4 years with her, and it was life changing for sure. For me, it was so important to be with somebody like Julie and learn everything that she had off. You know, it's incredible.
Also, she'll give you the Chicago accent. She'll teach you the, you know, she's Chicago all the way through and through. So she'll she'll teach you how to speak Chicago.
Yeah. Well, I'm still learning.
You're still learning. You're doing great. Well, is there anything that you wanted to talk about before we go? Is there anything coming up? I know you were in New York. I missed you when you were here. You know, like I said, pregnant wife. So, you know, I'm going to shows when I can, but it doesn't happen all the time.
I understand. Wow. You know, it's crazy. When I recorded this Naxos album, my baby was like 3 weeks old. So it was like, and I drove to Canada to record, and it was just crazy. It was like, I didn't get any sleep. And I was like, you know, like taking a baby and practicing at the same time. We have, I footage of her like this on the Mama Rule. I don't know, you probably don't know about the Mama Rule. If you don't, you should look it up. And
about the what?
The Mama Rule. The Mama Rule. Mama Rule, yeah.
Okay, what's that?
It's the chair that you put the baby on, the infant, and it rocks for you.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, it's a bassinet that is electronic. It's an electronic bassinet.
Yeah, I forgot the word bassinet. I don't remember it. Yeah, that's it. That's it. And it rocks baby. So I could practice while she would be on that thing.
That's what I heard. I heard from a father last night. I was out with a couple of guys, and one of the guys, a friend of mine, was a dad, and he goes, "You got to swaddle. You got to get 1,000 swaddles because they'll poop right through them, and they make them feel like they're in the womb." I have a lot to learn because, I'm just sitting there and I'm thinking, I'll put them right here, and then I'll just practice all I want, right? And then everything will be fine. No, you got to have a memory.
Yep. Well, also then you have like this little bag thing that you put in front, and baby can just sleep on the front. And sometimes I could practice with her there and the guitar.
With the thing, I forget what that's called. Yeah, I know what it's called.
Front bag.
Yeah, it's a front thing. It's like a kangaroo. Yeah. You become a kangaroo person.
Exactly, and you can practice. There you go, man. This all the guitar tips for you. Like
that's what I say to Liz. She's like, "Well, what's gonna happen?" I was like, "I'll watch them when I'll watch them while I practice. For the first year, it'll be fine."
Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you coming on, and I hope you come back to New York and we get to hang out because, I'd love to just talk in person about this stuff. This is, incredible work that you're doing. Thank you for everything that you've done for the guitar, for the instrument, and introducing us to this wonderful music.
Yeah, thank you, Brett. Thank you for having me and for your work, this incredible series, incredible podcast.
I really appreciate it. Thank you, An. That does it for my time with An Tran. Make sure to check in on his new album when it's out in a couple of months. Excited for that. And absolutely listen to his other album. His Vietnamese music album. It's unreal. Make sure you visit classicalguitarcorner.com and savageclassical.com and support the show. Always support the show. BrettWilliamsMusic.com/support. That's B-R-E-T, one T in Brett, WilliamsMusic.com/support to support your favorite guitar show. I'll see you guys next time.